Hi, my name is Jim Horrigan. I am the CEO of Cannacraft, one of the leading cannabis companies in California. And you are listening to Professionally Cannabis. Welcome to the show. Glad that you're here.
Where do they go? The smoke rings I blow each night.
Hello, listener, and welcome back to the Professionally Cannabis podcast. It gives me great pleasure to welcome to the pod today Jim Horrigan, the CEO of cannabis brand house Cannacraft, purveyors of quality sun-grown cannabis and the company behind popular strains such as Care by Design, Absolute Extracts, Satori Chocolates, Loud and Clear, and Hi-Fi Hops. I cannot wait to pick Jim's brain on creating quality products for the modern cannabis consumer. So with that in mind, there is only one thing left to say, and that is Jim. Welcome to the Professionally Cannabis Podcast.
Well, good afternoon, Jonathan. Thank you very much for having me. I'm excited to be here and look forward to talking.
Well, we're excited to have you here as well. And Jim, as you'll know, our first and customary question is, what led you to the plant?
Well, this is back when I was in high school, which is almost 45, 50 years ago. And I was playing American football. And I was playing both offensive line and defensive line. And a friend of mine had suggested after a couple games where you get pretty bruised up and it takes a couple days to recover that I might want to try some cannabis. And so I did. So my first experience with the plant was much more on the wellness side than it was the recreation side. I actually enjoy both quite a bit, but my first introduction to the plant was through a wellness sort of pain management program that long ago.
And for folks that perhaps are less familiar with the brands that sit under the Cannacraft banner, could you give us a little flavor as to the type of products that you guys like to develop and sort of who are your core consumers?
Yeah, so we have a very diverse portfolio and a very, what I would call, comprehensive set of form factors. So we try and provide cannabis in a variety of ways that consumers can access the product. That is everything from tinctures, we have gel caps, we have vaporizers, we have your what most people would look at as flower, we have pre-rolls, we have chocolates, we have gummies, and we have beverages. And we segregate the business sort of in two ways. One, on the recreation side, that is where people are going to consume the product to be happy and to relax. And they are looking to have an elevated sort of experience. We also have a wellness division, and that is really looking at how do you help people manage pain, how do you help people sleep, how do you help people relax. And then the third, which is really just starting out, is beverages. And that is an exciting segment for us because we see it as a opportunity for people to use our product and maybe move away from alcohol. And the reason we get very excited is for a host of reasons. One, no hangover, but we have a beverage that is very similar to a beer that has no calories, no carbohydrates, and again, no hangover. And so for us, that's pretty exciting. So on our recreation side, that is our Absolute Extracts or ABX. On the wellness side, it is Care by Design. And then in beverages, we have a joint venture with Lagunitas that is now owned by Heineken that has the Hi-Fi Hops. They've been very helpful to us in developing the product, the formulations, and the taste.
And perhaps looking at cannabis beverages, how big a market do you see this being? You know, of course, it's a new product. It's a new sort of form factor that folks are not traditionally au fait with when they are consuming cannabis. Sort of what do you see as the real potential for this portion of the market?
Yeah, we see it as a huge opportunity going forward. It has been what I would call sort of slow to get going. And that is because it is not available in the places that people are purchasing alcohol, not only at your local store, but even at, other events. We are just starting to see that open up. And we are very encouraged. We have in San Francisco a big concert event called Outside Lands, and it's over 3 days, and about 200,000 people attend this event. Well, they have allowed now cannabis to be consumed on site, so we can actually sell. So our Hi-Fi Hops was a significant player in that concert, and we heard from some of the beer manufacturers that they did not see the same level of sales that they had previously, and we knew people were starting to substitute for that. The other thing we see is that you can do a microdose product, so you could have a product that has a sort of lower level of THC, so you're not getting the psychoactivity of, say, you would from 10 or more milligrams of THC. So you could have two or three of these in a social setting without getting a lot of social, a little psychoactivity going. So for us, we see it as a big market. It's still going to take some time to really get going.
And looking at these sort of beverages, what's the onset like for consumers who are having one of these cannabis beers? And perhaps as an extension of that, what type of education needs to happen around these, I guess broadly speaking, new types of products in the market so that consumers are able to, well, consume them fun and effectively, you know, making sure that folks are, for want of a better phrase, dosing in the correct ways or not too much?
Yeah, it's a really important part of what we've worked on here with our beverages. And we worked, we have a couple of PhDs in cannabis on staff that worked with the team from Lagunitas to ensure that the onset and offset were very similar to what you would feel in alcohol, because just as you said, the education part is sometimes difficult. We knew from experience, and I know from friends that have had gummies in the past, where they would consume a gummy, and 15 minutes later, they were not feeling anything, so they decided to take another.
Common problem, eh?
Yeah, which led to, you know, a bad experience or anxiety or that type of thing. So we worked very hard to formulate a product that was a very similar onset and offset to alcohol. And that all comes from how you formulate the nano emulsions that you use into the beverages. And again, we can then tweak that just as you can raise or lower the amount of alcohol in a consumable product. We can do the same with THC. And so that's how we are trying to bring that to a broad marketplace. So we have everything from a 10 milligram Hi-Fi Hops down to what we would consider a microdose, where you have a ratio of 18 parts CBD to 1 part THC. That is a much more relaxing product. I use that after a workout. It is very helpful. And again, with only 1 part THC, you're not getting that psychoactivity or the high that you know, some people want to avoid if you're going to be driving, working, or the like. And again, Jonathan, the cool thing is, if you're going into a workout and then you step out and you go to your pub and you're having a couple pints, well, that may have negated what you just worked out.
Yeah.
with these beverages, you can have a couple of pints. And again, you're not getting the calories or carbohydrates.
And Jim, I touched upon it earlier in my introduction, and I know that you are very firm in your belief that sun-grown cannabis is the optimal type of product and the type of product that you like to have within your brand house. Could you give our listeners a little bit of a flavor as to why you are so specifically focused on sun-grown cannabis?
Yeah, for a couple reasons. You know, one, the ability to grow outdoor is certainly less expensive, but it's also much easier on the environment. When you go indoors, and that is you can have a great product, multiple harvests during the year with an indoor product, but then you're looking at expensive lighting, you're looking at expensive infrastructure to put into place, and not everywhere can have sun grown. So I see the reasons where you need indoor. But for us, we're fortunate to be here in Northern California, where, you know, we biasly feel that we grow some of the best cannabis in the world. And we can do that just like California is the breadbasket for the United States in food production. We can be that same type of breadbasket for cannabis. We also like the idea of supporting farmers that have been in the business for a long time and now have the chance to do that in a legal framework. We still have a lot of work to do there as far as taxes and the like. But for us, being able to support farmers, being able to grow outdoors, which is much more, again, environmentally friendly, we think actually produces some of the best product also.
And perhaps looking at the product itself, when you're growing your cannabis outside, how do you and how are you able to ensure the same level of quality and consistency batch to batch, harvest to harvest? Which, you know, I imagine when you're developing specific brands that are going to have certain products within them, having that level of consistency is key. So the consumer knows that if they're getting X products, this is the type of experience they'll have. How do you guys manage that?
Yeah, it's interesting. And we do a couple of things in that area. We have what I would call our base level of products. That is a very sort of standard product that you will know every time that it's going to be the same consistency, the same quality, and you will get the same experience with that. And there's a lot of people that want that type of product. On the other side, there is the consumer that likes a variety of products, that likes to try different strains, different levels of THC, and so we provide a variety of those. And those are more in and out. So they'll come into a store, they'll sell out, and then you will have another strain the next week that comes in. So we do both. We have that baseline of products that you can count on day in and day out. And then we have sort of this rotating variety of different strains that will provide different experiences.
And perhaps looking at some of the environmental factors around sun-grown cannabis, of course, in terms of the impact on the environment, much better than indoors. However, I imagine you are far more susceptible to the elements getting in the way and impacting upon your crop and your harvest. Could you run us through some of the potential variabilities and issues that operators like yourself might have to contend with when you are growing outdoor cannabis?
Yeah, well, certainly weather is the number one factor that we face. And we actually have weather stations throughout our outdoor grows to help us monitor the amount of humidity, the amount of sun that the plants may be getting. And so for a variety of reasons, we have to be conscious of that. We also have to ensure that we harvest before there's a frost. If the product actually is in an environment where you have 2 or 3 days of frost, you will lose your trichomes, and that is where you're getting some of your THC, but also your terpenes, which makes the product that much better for smell, taste, and the like. Unfortunately, in California, we're also facing another issue, and that is fires. And so fire itself, if it gets close to your grows, and we've unfortunately had farms that have been impacted by fire. But then secondly, even if it's not fire itself, you can get smoke, and you can get what is called smoke taint. And that's a word we picked up from a lot of the vineyards that are here in Northern California, Napa and Sonoma counties. So for us, it's everything from too much rain to lack of rain, too much sun, fires, and unfortunately climate change, because now we are seeing the times in the summer where the heat is starting to become an issue. And so for us, even outdoors, we have to start thinking about do we look at some sort of stretching some fabric over some of the fields to sort of mitigate some of those issues. So outdoor is, even though it seems maybe easier than indoor, you still have a host of challenges to overcome.
And perhaps building on that, when you're looking at things like the fires that do occur in the area, and the smoke taint that might occur, or perhaps issues with the water that is contaminated water and things of that sort, how are you guys able to address and negate these issues so that your harvest and your crop isn't devastated if these sort of environmental factors are occurring around the area?
Yeah, so we are very particular on where we grow. And so we've looked at those types of challenges that are coming. And so we have found with the acres that we're growing on that we've tried to de-risk it as much as possible. So it's in a lower level, not so much in the hills, to avoid some of the smoke or fires that may occur. And then we're also looking to be a little bit north. So our grows are about an hour north of where our headquarters is, which, again, is about an hour north of San Francisco. And you get a desert, almost desert-like environment. So you get the cool nights and the warm days. We just got to be careful that warm days don't become overly hot days. So we look very carefully on where we're going to grow. And then we watch the weather very carefully. For one, we can start to plant at the beginning of the year. And then when do we harvest? What is the opportune time to harvest so we avoid frost that, are sometimes hard to predict?
Now, we've seen over the last couple of years, as a byproduct of the COVID pandemic, actually for a lot of cannabis producers and brands have seen a huge spike up in the demand for their product. People are locked down and perhaps wanting to consume more products in a wellness capacity or in a recreational adult use capacity. Now, when your operations are fully outdoor and you have sun-grown cannabis for all of your products, obviously that means you have a sort of a finite amount of land and a finite amount of harvest that you're able to cultivate in a year. With those factors considered, how does an organization such as Cannacraft respond to spikes in consumer demand? Are you able to respond to that uptake in demand for your products quickly, or is it a sort of, you've got to accept that there's going to be a little bit of a bedding in period as you're able to acquire more land? How do you guys respond to it?
Yeah, for us, it would be very difficult to respond quickly to changes in demand during a season. So, season to season, we increase the acreage that we will have available, and we look at that every year. But in season, if we're seeing those demand spikes, we will go out on the spot market to farms that have product available, and we will purchase through them. Secondly, because most of our products are what I would call manufactured products, that is where we take our sun-grown cannabis, we extract that through a variety of methodologies, whether it's CO2, butane, ethanol, hydrocarbon extraction. We then turn that into a cannabis oil. That is the baseline formulation for all of our products, from vaporizers to gummies to our beverages. So we are a little bit insulated in that way that we can use our oil, and that is much easier to extract and store. Flour is much more fragile. That is something that will quickly deteriorate if not kept in a frozen type of state.
And perhaps keeping on that theme of consumer demand, how have you seen this change develop and evolve in the last 2 years that we've seen? Again, a COVID affected 2 years that we've lived through. How have you seen consumer demand change, and in what way do you expect it to continue to evolve?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that we saw was we did see an increase in consumer usage of cannabis, which was always encouraging. We also were fortunate that cannabis and our dispensary customers were deemed as essential. So they have stayed open throughout COVID. We didn't have any of the shutdowns that other industries had to work through. What we did see is an incredible amount of delivery come online, and that was through pure delivery companies. But most of our dispensary customers put on delivery around their shops, a sort of limited geographic reach. We know some stores that actually went dark, and during COVID, even though they could open, they decided not to, and what they did is they set up delivery. So for us, it was very important now that we were on everybody's online menu. We had to make sure that all our images were up to date, and worked hard on that because we knew that more and more customers were buying and making decisions online. And even after some of the COVID restrictions have come down a little bit, we're still seeing that. So probably similar to many other industries, consumers are learning, educating themselves about cannabis online, and then making a purchase decision, whether that's then delivered, it's picked up curbside, or they're actually going to the store and make that purchase. More and more of that is being, that purchase decision is done online.
And with consumers now doing a lot more of their research and purchasing products online, what does that mean for a company like yours? How do you have to change the way in which your products are positioned so that they are equally as competitive as they might be in a store? I guess you go down to a dispensary, there might be a finite amount of products that a consumer can pick from. Online, slightly different ball game. How do you guys go about addressing this?
Yeah, in a couple different ways, Jonathan. One is we still work very closely with the bud tender. Whether that's live in store or you have bud tenders that are manning chat rooms online. So it's still very important that we're working with them to educate them about CannaCraft products. But then secondly, we're trying to do more and more through digital. So we've got a website, we are very heavy into social with Instagram, and really trying to pull a little bit of education through those channels. We also know that the time that consumers will spend against that is very, very limited. So we have to ensure that we've got a simple and easy message and education for people to consume.
And Jim, as our time starts moving a little bit closer to the end, perhaps a final question for you, or final sort of strand of questioning. And that is, what's your own personal relationship with cannabis? How do you and what do you consume? I know you mentioned about the cannabis beers after your workout. Sort of, how else do you engage with the product?
Being with CannaCraft and the host of products that we have, I like to try all of them. It's important for me that if we have a product coming out, that I've tried it. One for the taste, and then secondly for the quality. But I would say
it's a perk of the job.
Yes, it's very nice. The other perk is that I do get the opportunity to smoke our flower, and that's on the recreation side. But then on the beverage side, that's very nice to be able to do that. There's actually a term that has been developed. It's called California Sober. And what that means is you no longer consume alcohol. You're just consuming cannabis, and that's sort of an interesting way to go. So for me, being able to do that and perhaps, take my alcohol consumption down, I still enjoy a beer or a drink like most people, but cannabis is now my preferred choice. And if I couldn't throw in one other thing on that, Jonathan, we also view cannabis not only as a good alternative to alcohol, but we very much view it as a great alternative to opioids. And so we're working very hard to look at cannabis, not as an entry drug, but as an exit drug. So if I can plug cannabis that way, I'd like to do that.
Is there an argument to say that we need to be reframing cannabis away from the word drug itself?
I certainly believe you should, yes. I think that as more education comes on, you will find that, it is not an addictive type of drug. There are people that are certainly heavy users and maybe even to a chronic type of user. But cannabis is such a wonderful plant that it goes all the way from recreation, again, to wellness. And so we believe that you should almost be celebrating cannabis rather than stigmatizing it.
Well, I absolutely agree with you there. And Jim, unfortunately, the clock has beaten us, but I've absolutely loved having you on the show today. And I have an image in my head that you and your senior management team sit around trying products at breakfast and then go the whole day being California sober. And for me, that is a great, great image. But Jim, I'd like to say thank you so much for joining us on Professionally Cannabis.
Jonathan, thanks so much. It was a real pleasure.
Please take me above.